So the character study that we're looking at today is Joseph, but specifically Joseph in the context of his reign, if you will, as Pharaoh's second in command in Egypt under the name Zaphnath-Paneah. And so again, this is the name that is actually given to Joseph by Pharaoh in the Genesis record. In Genesis 41 verse 44, Pharaoh says, "I am Pharaoh, and without thee, Joseph, shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt." And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. So let's start off by talking about the meaning of this name, and then we'll read the relevant passage, which is found mostly in the latter half of Genesis 41, and a little there's a little more information past there as well. So the honest truth is that we don't know a whole lot about this name. Zaphnath-Paneah is an Egyptian name, and it's been explained by many different sources in many different ways. Some think it means creator or preserver of life. Others say it is a governor of the district in the place of life. Others explain it as a revealer of secrets, or the man to whom secrets is revealed. And that last one seems to make the most sense to me, because after all, by the power of God, Joseph was able to interpret the dreams of the butler and the baker, as we know, and also Pharaoh's dreams as well. So based purely on the context of Joseph's situation in Egypt and Pharaoh's recognition of his abilities, that particular definition makes the most sense. The man to whom secrets are revealed. So that's what we'll run with. So, Genesis 41, and I'll read this. You can follow along if you want to. Starting in verse 37, and just for context, prior to verse 37, Joseph had interpreted Pharaoh's dreams regarding the 7 years of plenty, which were then followed by 7 years of famine. So let's see what we find. Genesis 41, verse 37. "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh," the interpretation, "and in the eyes of all his servants as well. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, Forasmuch as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than you. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh took the ring off his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and he arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and he put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had, and they cried before him, Bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities. The food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the year of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil in all my father's house. And the name of the second he called Ephraim. For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And the 7 years of plenty that was in Egypt were ended. And the 7 years of famine began, according as Joseph had said. And the famine was in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said to the Egyptians, go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, you shall do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth. And Joseph opened the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt. And all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all the lands. So there you have it. That's the core of what we know about Zaphnath-Paneah and what he did. What a great place to start. So first off, let's go back to Joseph's birth name, Joseph, which means to add to or to increase. Indeed, we find that this definition is just as symbolic as that of Zaphnath-Paneah. What did Joseph do in these verses that we just read? He increased the food stores in Egypt ahead of a time of famine, just like his namesake, to increase. So therein we find a powerful message. Joseph had given some good advice to Pharaoh, which was that in the years of plenty, he should lay up for the years of famine, buy up the corn and grain when it was cheap, that he would both enrich himself and supply the land of Egypt for a time when food would be precious and scarce. And this is a practice that not only was carried out in biblical times, but is carried out today as well. And not just by humans, but by animals. Why do squirrels bury acorns? Why do bees make honey? Why do bears hibernate? Why do the birds fly south? Simply because they all know that something is coming. In most cases, it's the turning of the seasons, which is an absolute in our existence. Nothing can stop the seasons from changing. And by the same token, in this passage, the oncoming years of plenty and famine were a fixed certainty. God had planned those, and they were going to come to pass. And with Joseph's message, Pharaoh was able to prepare. Or more specifically, Joseph, Zaphnath-Paneah, was able to prepare under Pharaoh's supervision. And we also see this great honor that Pharaoh bestowed upon Joseph. He gave him an honorable testimony. He said, he is a man in whom the Spirit of God is. Pharaoh recognized that God was helping Joseph. Pharaoh also put him into an honorable office. He not only employed him to buy up the corn, but he made him second in command of the state and of the household. Thou shalt be over my house, the chief justice of the kingdom. According to thy word shall all my people be ruled. I've set thee over all the land of Egypt. Only Pharaoh will be greater. It's amazing that Pharaoh gave Joseph all this power just because he interpreted a dream. But in fairness, earlier on when he interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker, those dreams happened. They came true in real life. So I think that there was a little bit of, you know, Pharaoh saw that what Joseph was saying was actually happening, and he said, okay, there's something going on here. I need to listen to this guy. And it's probable also that there were those in Pharaoh's court who opposed Joseph's elevation, people who had been there far longer who were ready to be elevated to positions of power. How would you like it if you were the second most qualified person in an office, and then somebody who just showed up a week ago ended up as the boss? It's kind of the situation that happened here. But Pharaoh was constantly repeating this grant of power that he gave to Joseph. And with that solemn sanction, he said, I am Pharaoh. Pharaoh did the following. He gave him his own ring as a symbol of his commission and a token of his favor. He put fine clothes on Joseph instead of his prison garments. For those that are in the king's palaces must wear soft clothing. So basically that morning, Joseph was dragging his prison irons, and before the night was concluded, he was adorned with fine clothing and treasures. What a remarkable turn of events. Pharaoh also made Joseph ride in the second chariot, which is a huge honor in this society. And he ordered all to do as Joseph commanded. He said to all of them, bow the knee as to Pharaoh himself. Give this man the same respect that you would give me. And of course, he gave him a new name, as we know, to show his authority. And yet such a name has represented the respect Pharaoh had for him, Zaphnath-Paneah, a revealer of secrets. And he married him honorably to a prince's daughter. Where God had been liberal in giving wisdom and other merits, Pharaoh was not sparing in bestowing honors on Joseph. And I'd say that this honoring of Joseph was more than a worthy repayment for Joseph's innocent and patient suffering that he'd gone through up to this point. Definitely an example of the goodness of providence in this case. And it's certainly an encouragement to all good people to trust in a good God. And as we move further down this chapter, we also saw a few other things happen. So among them, we saw the building of Joseph's family now that he was in Egypt, the birth of these two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And later in Joseph's life, later on after this, after the events we are all familiar with, where Joseph is reunited with his brothers, and eventually Jacob's entire household moves to Egypt, Jacob will actually bless and adopt both of Zaphnath-Paneah's sons. Ephraim, as we saw in context in that reading, Ephraim signifies fruitfulness, and Manasseh signifies forgetfulness. For these two often go together. And it's worth mentioning that Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, was the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and he was from the house of Ephraim. So together, the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh also formed what is loosely known as the tribe of Joseph. So we're seeing here that the fine clothing that Joseph is wearing and the situation that he's in at this point, it's kind of making him forget about the multicolored coat that he wore in his father's house. He's now carrying out God's will in the land of Egypt instead of in the land of Canaan. He is quite literally being made fruitful in the land of his affliction. But despite that, Egypt is still the land of his affliction, no matter what happens, quite simply because it's not Canaan. Canaan is otherwise known as the land of promise. And his distance from his father was indeed an affliction. I'm sure he missed his father very much. It's worth noting, too, that this light that is carried and sown for the righteous in a barren and unlikely soil. We see this in Joseph. And if God sows light and waters it, even in a difficult place, in barren ground, it will still come up out of that barren ground. And just look at the accomplishments that came out of Joseph's predictions by God's power, of course. Pharaoh had great confidence in the truths of the interpretation of his dream. And so he gave Joseph this authority to prepare for the 7 years of famine. Now here's a question for all of us to consider. Right now in each of our individual lives, are we in a period of plenty or are we in a period of hardship? And for some of us, this isn't really a difficult distinction to make, but for others, it might not be so straightforward. I think I'm in a state of plenty at the moment, And I also recognize that that could change at any time. We need to foresee the approaching days both of prosperity and hardship, and also of opportunity. We must not be too secure or feel too safe when things are prospering. And we can't be too slothful in the improvement of ourselves. We have to constantly improve ourselves, because years of plenty will always come to an end at some point. The morning comes, and also the night, and the spring, summer, autumn, and winter, the plenty, and also the famine. That is a certainty. So, the famine came to Egypt, as planned. And the famine, it seems, was not only in Egypt, but it was in other lands as well. In all lands, that is, the neighboring countries, these fruitful lands are soon turned into barrenness for the iniquity of those that dwell within. It was here said that in the land of Egypt there was bread, meaning probably not only that which Joseph had brought up for the king, but that which private citizens had stored up because of seeing Joseph's example. They said, oh, okay, what is Joseph doing? Oh, I should probably do that as well. Makes sense. So at the end of the day, Joseph had made a huge impact on not just the practices of Pharaoh's workers, but the habits of the common man in Egypt as well. They trusted him. Joseph had become a symbol of hope in this struggling land, as should any good steward. You could say that Joseph saved Egypt in this time of famine. And in the same way, later on in Scripture, Moses saved Israel by bringing Israel out from captivity. Paul, the Apostle Paul, saved many in the churches of Asia by converting them. And of course, the Lord Jesus the Christ saved the world. And thus we have all of these types of Christ. Joseph was also very careful in giving out the food that had been stored up when the famine came. He kept the markets stocked by furnishing them at a reasonable pace so that it wouldn't all go away too quickly. The people in distress cried to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said, go to Joseph. And Joseph, Zaphnath-Paneah, was indeed, I believe, a type of Christ. God, in the gospel record, he directs those that appeal to him for mercy and grace to go to the Lord Jesus, in whom all fullness dwells. And in both the case of Joseph and of Jesus, whatever he saith to you, you shall doeth. And Joseph, no doubt, with wisdom and with justice, he fixed the price of the corn he sold so that Pharaoh, whose money had bought it up, might have a reasonable profit, and yet the country might not be too oppressed or taxed or any advantage taken of their necessity in the time of famine. Supply and demand can be a treacherous game when disaster strikes a population, and Joseph did his best to not let this happen. So let us also, all of us, strive to be kind to our brother in the same way when facing struggles. So what else is there to learn about this character? Well, Joseph's brothers came down to Egypt during that famine to get food for their family, just as everyone else in the land did, because, of course, Canaan was also affected by the famine. We know this story by heart, what is coming. Joseph hid his identity, and he spoke roughly to his brothers. And after the situation where Benjamin found the goblet in his grain sack, Joseph revealed himself to his brothers. That was in Genesis 45. And moreover, Joseph further proved himself as a man who prepares for the worst in Genesis 47. Let me read a little bit of this chapter. Genesis 47, starting in verse 14. It says, "And Joseph gathered up all the money that was found in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan for the corn which they bought. And Joseph brought the money into Pharaoh's house. And when money failed in the land of Egypt and in the land of Canaan, all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, 'Give us bread. For why should we die in thy presence? For the money faileth.'" Economic collapse. "And Joseph said, 'Give your cattle, and I will give you for your cattle if money fail.' And they brought their cattle unto Joseph, and Joseph gave them bread in exchange for horses, and for the flocks, and for the cattle of the herds, and for the asses, and he fed them with bread for all their cattle for that year." Let me just explain briefly what is going on here. Joseph faced a situation where money was suddenly not a useful way to obtain goods. So what he did was, he said to all these people, "Whatever you have, use it as currency. If you need food, you don't have to give me money. Give me cattle instead. Give me goods, and I will give you food in exchange." So he gave the people of Egypt and of Canaan an opportunity to pay for food in any way that they could. So he's still taking care of the population, six chapters later. Verse 18, "When that year was ended, they came unto him in the second year and said unto him, 'We will not hide it from my Lord, how that our money is spent. My Lord also hath our herds of cattle. There is not aught left in the sight of my Lord, but our bodies and our lands.'" So they're running out of things to spend, if you will. "Wherefore shall we die before thine eyes, both we and our land? Buy us and our land for bread, and we and our land will be servants unto Pharaoh, and give us seed that we may live and not die, that the land be desolate." Excuse me, "that the land be not desolate." So Joseph bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh. For the Egyptians sold every man his field because the famine prevailed over them. So the land became Pharaoh's. "And as for the people, he removed them to cities from one end of the borders of Egypt, even to the other end thereof. Only the land of the priests bought he not. For the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them. Wherefore they sold not their lands. Then Joseph said unto the people, 'Behold, I have bought you this day and your land for Pharaoh. Lo, here is seed for you, and ye shall sow the land. And it shall come to pass in the increase, you shall give the fifth part unto Pharaoh, and four parts shall be your own, for seed of the field, and for your food, and for them of your households, and for food for your little ones.' And they said, 'Joseph, you've saved our lives. Let us find grace in the sight of my Lord, and we will be Pharaoh's servants.'" 24, verse 24 there, you give the fifth part. Effectively, that means that they were taxed at 20%, and they got to keep 80%. I'd say that was pretty fair in this particular situation. So what we're trying to say here is Joseph made things work, and he took care of the people. He didn't let them starve. He helped them in any way that he could. And in doing this, Joseph, Zaphnath-Paneah, during a time of severe famine, he arranged for the people to pay with whatever they had to give, thus justifying one of the many claimed translations of his name, Zaphnath-Paneah, the preserver of life. And that's pretty much all there is to say about this particular character. He was wise, and in achieving this position of great stature and influence, he didn't abuse it. He could have. Instead, he threw himself wholeheartedly into this role with joy in his heart. And in the same way, we should strive to give 100% of our energy and our focus to serving the Lord in these last days? And can't you also say that Christ, in a similar fashion, he could have abused his power? When he was being hung on the cross, he could have summoned legions of angels to save him from the cross, but he didn't. That's what I have on Zaphnath-Paneah.